Found this in Gunner room. Gunner mirror near.
What is it?
Well, it's a performance.
You're listening to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me, as always, the Grand Patak.
Oh, the Grand Patak! Aaron O'Brien! I wasn't expecting that one. Man, how did that happen? It was all going so honorably for a while.
You gotta spit out a couple of Klingon words every now and then just to keep things Star Trek-y.
I guess.
Hey guys, so today we're gonna talk about we're gonna rate the Star Trek series, each of our own, so you kind of know where we stand going forward. So when we say certain things, you know where we're coming from.
Yeah, I think that every series has its own kind of personality, its own feels for it. Everyone has their own takes of what they enjoy, but let's face it. We all have our own opinions, and because we are science fiction nuts and Star Trek nuts, we are strongly opinionated.
That we are. But first, do we have any news for Star Trek? I mean, I haven't seen anything lately. I know you posted on our Facebook page that Sophia Buletta from Kingsman has been assigned. Has been cast as somebody. We're not sure who.
Yeah, she's another person who's been on there. There's two possibilities. She could be one of those female roles, maybe a captain that you were thinking of.
She could be the captain that they're speculating having. Who's a Starfleet captain. She could be McCoy's wife, and if so, he's been robbing the cradle, which is why she took all his bones.
Or a bone.
There's another female. I can't remember what the other rumor was for another female character, but I really hope she's not a member of the Enterprise, because Carol Marcus barely had a part in the last movie, and since she's Kirk's baby mommy,
Yeah, not yet, but soon to be.
Or, you know, but from the old timeline.
Do you think Carol Marcus will come back in the next one?
I hope so, because, I mean, they're...
I liked her.
The story between Kirk and her, like, didn't, like, really go anywhere.
I know, I liked her. I liked her as her... I liked her personality, just how she came across.
Yeah, he gawked at her for a little bit, and then, you know, I mean, she's, like, hiding from Daddy, then comes out to Daddy.
And Daddy's head gets crushed, and her legs get snapped in two.
You know, a little stepping, a little
smashing.
Oh,
it would be awesome if she had a little hobble every time she walked, that she never quite ever fixed.
I hope 23rd century medicine is good enough to fix a broken bone.
I hope so too. Well, another thought is that casting. I think she'd make a very excellent Romulan.
Or no. Go with me here. Maybe she could be the Dura sister's mother.
Oh God. I'm hoping the Duras sisters were, like, clones or some kind of, like, genetically engineered stuff that just never to be repeated again. Crimes against Klingon, the Klingon race.
I liked the Duras sisters. They show up in Next Generation. They show up in Deep Space Nine. And unfortunately, they get killed in Star Trek Generations.
Yeah.
That was the worst way to take them out. And they weren't even really the main bad guys. They were like henchmen to the main bad guy.
Yeah, so
you shouldn't reduce the Duras sisters to just henchmen.
Yeah, so if anybody wants to know, Duras sisters were like a reoccurring two characters. They're Klingons. They're pretty nasty. And they're basically the bad guys.
They wanted to take over the Klingon High Command with their brother, who was probably a bastard.
Yeah, they're the Team Rocket of Star Trek. That's a Pokemon reference. I'm sorry, everyone.
You're making Pokemon references? Are we now a Pokemon podcast?
No, it's the first thing to keep in mind. They're just pathetic.
Yeah, they showed up all over the place, and I thought they were really interesting characters, and they were never the henchmen of anybody, which I felt why their use in Generations as henchmen was really a disservice to the characters of the Duras sisters. Also, on our Facebook page, when we did our future Star Trek episode, we asked a couple, which posted on the Facebook group, and say, hey, what do you want for the future of Star Trek? And Frank Wu, the guy who actually gave us the idea for doing the last episode comparing Metamorphosis and First Contact, he wanted to see a Star Trek series set in the Mirror Universe, where everyone's killing each other, and it's kind of like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how that would actually work out as a full series, but because I think you'd lose pretty much everybody sooner or later.
Well, I think that's the point, except for Spock, because if it's in the Prime Universe, we know Spock rises to Emperor, and he turns the Federation into the Empire into pacifists, and then they get taken over by the Klingon-Cardassian alliance.
Right, and then if you recall, there was a great two-parter episode in Enterprise to Mirror Darkly, which was excellent. It just going in the whole mirror. It had nothing to do with anything. They just shot those two in there just for fun.
Yeah, those are great episodes. I love the Mirror Universe. It's a great idea. I think if they did a series in the Mirror Universe, it would need to follow a different ship, not the Enterprise, or it would need to take place in the JJ universe, whereas there's no existing canon in the JJ universe for what happens later, like there is in the Prime universe, where we know the Federation basically just goes, or the United Empire or whatever, just goes downhill.
Yeah, yeah. It's a cool idea. I've never hated the Mirror universe, but I always kind of thought it was like a sideshow myself. I mean, even when we did the Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe, them jumping back and forth, there was some interesting stuff that happened, but it was sort of just like, it's like a funny tale to tell.
To me, it kind of almost did too much in Deep Space Nine. They could have done a couple two-parters instead of doing like one every single season. That might have been a little bit better. The Trek Geeks podcast actually did an interview with Nana Visitor, and she on the interview she was saying that she was trying to get the writers to do the intendant Kira as a double agent, where she was actually in the prime timeline messing with things, and Kira was cool. Locked away. That was like a really cool idea, and I'm really sad that they didn't take Nana's idea and run with it, because that sounds like a really cool idea, making her like a double agent.
Yeah, that would be cool. I think there's a lot you can do with the Mirror Universe. The only thing is I have some issues with the Mirror Universe is that it just doesn't... I mean, obviously it's fiction, but it doesn't ever seem like it would actually work in real life. If you're always looking around your corner, over your shoulder, and always worried that the next guy is coming to get you. There's only so much paranoia and threats can move a society. After a while, people kind of like, I would imagine, would very much stagnate. Your whole society would stagnate because of that.
Well, if you got the Game of Thrones writing team on it, they could probably come up with something pretty good, maybe. Who knows?
And that's kind of the same way I feel about the Klingons, how they're portrayed. That I wonder if their whole society had stagnated a lot, and maybe that's the reason why we saw at the end of Star Trek VI, Undiscovered Country, why maybe they were so weak by that point. But that's a topic for another day.
And we have been talking about doing this Klingon topic, so it's definitely on the burner somewhere. It's going to come out sometime, and I'm really looking forward to doing it. But another thing about the future Star Trek, which I wanted to mention last time but didn't before we got started with our last week's topic, I know this is probably going to get a lot of rage and hate, but I think it'd be really interesting if Disney bought them out. And I see the meme online where the Star Destroyer stationed the Enterprise, and it's like Quicksilver before they acquire us. But I'm like, CBS and Paramount are sitting on this property and doing nothing with it.
Yeah,
like we talked about in our future Star Trek episode.
I understand, and I do feel for you. Like, you want to see some traction, want to see some movement with the Star Trek universe. But my feeling has been, I have enjoyed the Marvel movies. I'm pretty sure I'll enjoy, from what I've seen so far just in the trailers, I'll enjoy what the Star Wars movies have in store. Here's my issue with a company like Disney owning everything is it just feels wrong that everyone, just one entity holds the cards to so much of our beloved intellectual property.
Well, I definitely agree with you there, and I wish, you know, there was another company who acted like Disney and like bought up franchises.
Warner
and, like,
Brothers?
And like, we're going to actually...
I'm joking.
They own their entire superhero franchise, and they have no idea what
to do
with it.
They're like, oh, what do you do with Superman? Who's Superman?
They have no idea what to do with it.
Well, and I've been toiling with this thought for a long time, and I know this kind of going a little off topic of Star Trek, but with everything owned by a Disney type of company, I worry about like the homogenization of all things. We see it a lot in our culture today because we have everything is controlled by these larger corporations, and there's very little room now for the little guys to kind of poke their heads up with some really like a good idea, but maybe it needs some time to get some traction. You know, I think that's what we need. We need to still see more ideas out there. And I know there are people out there creating, and there's people working on things. It doesn't even have to be sci-fi related. It just, you know, are their own ideas of what they're working on, film, music, their own literature, and or whatever they're working on. But you need that, like, differences and all these little tiny nuances without one umbrella company, like, trying to bring everything up. That's my fear.
Well, I definitely agree. I don't think, you know, it would be a shame for Star Trek to be, you know, put under this huge umbrella and things getting, you know, more homogenized. But I just want to see more Star Trek. They're sitting on these properties, and like what we talked about in our future Star Trek episode, the fans are the only ones doing anything, and the fans are limited by their funds. I mean, the Star Trek Continues has done two pretty big Kickstarters, and they've been successful, and they're mm-hmm. making episodes, but that's still only like, you know, three episodes a year, four episodes a year, maybe. Not like, you know, something a network could do. And CBS and Paramount are both sitting on Star Trek. I mean, like, I know they're making the movies, but I mean, like, there was a huge gap in between Star Trek and Star Trek Into Darkness. There was like a five and a half, six-year gap. That's way too long.
It's a long time. And then just going in between the movies, you know, for Paramount, you know, like Star Trek VI, and then what do we go into? We have the not First Contact. We have Generations First Contact. I don't even know what was the not Insurrection. What's the last Nemesis. One? Nemesis. When did that even come out? That was like...
That came out the same time as Return of the King, whatever year that was, 2005?
Okay. All right. So it was, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah,
it seems like a lot longer in between.
So Nemesis came out during the same time as Return of the King, and I think the second Harry Potter movie. They all launched really close to each other, and the Lord of the Rings movies were multi-view movies.
Yeah.
And anyone who might have gone to see Star Trek probably saw Lord of the Rings again, because it's one of those movies that you want to see again because it's so grand and spectacular on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
I know my dad doesn't agree with me. He's like, that doesn't matter. And I'm like, if they want to see Star Trek, they'd see Star Trek. But no, people go see movies that, you know, with their friends. And if their friends are like, hey, let's go see Lord of the Rings, and they've, you know, they'll probably go see it again.
That's a young person, too, like a 20-some-year-old to 30, probably. That's something that they do.
And that's the demographic that Star Trek is missing, usually.
Yeah, exactly. And it's because they haven't built up anything. They haven't, the fan base they have is still the reserves from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And now, you know, let's face it, we're all getting older.
They need to come out with something that'll engage a new generation of Star Trek fan that'll engage the younger audience. We need a TV show, or, I mean, as much as I hate to say it, another animated show. I really don't want to see Star Trek animated, but if that's what it takes to draw on a young audience, to get them to look forward to movies and maybe to grow them into seeing a live action show,
yeah,
I'll take it, as long as we can grow that user base.
I don't know, but I just feel like, and I'm not knocking Disney whatsoever, I think they've been doing a fantastic job, but I just worry just one company holding all the cards to all of our, you know, beloved intellectual properties, so that we, you know, all the fandom that we care about, you know, and, you know, I probably is not going to happen anyways, but it's a nice thought.
It's just the what if. I was just, you know,
It would be nice, but I think Disney's probably got their hands full right now, unless they become so wildly successful with Star Wars and Marvel that they can just start buying, you know, more properties.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll see how that goes. But on to the topic.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about
what
our favorite series. We're gonna rank our favorite series. Do you know
who's the boss?
No.
Oh, damn.
No, Star Trek series. Our favorite Star Trek series.
Is that
series.
What we're talking about today? All right, okay.
No, we're talking about Pokemon. We're rating our favorite Pokemon episodes today. So which Team Rocket episode is your favorite?
God, they're all terrible. They're so stupid.
All right, so for real, guys, do you want to go with your... You know, rate the series in order? Like basically, we're each going to rate the series in order, and then we're going to basically defend our position.
All right. I don't want you to be mad at me, though. But I know you will be. So, here it is. Going from top to bottom, number one, the original series. I know that's no mystery to you.
Well, that's, you know, it's in one way a no-brainer, because without it, there'd be nothing else.
Right. But that is my top. Number two is Next Generation. Number three is Enterprise. Number four is Deep Space Nine. And then I go down to Voyager, and then the animated series. And I should almost recuse myself of the animated series, because I have not rewatched it. I literally watched it when I was a child, and there's only like I probably only have watched 6-7 episodes, and it's like I'm not really up with the animated series.
I watched them all in 2009 after the movie came out, and then we both rewatched yesteryear so we could talk about that
right.
In one of our earlier episodes. So for me, my favorite's going to be Deep Space Nine.
We knew that. I knew that.
It's that's my top, and then we're going from top bottom like Aaron did. I would go the Next Generation, and then I would go Enterprise. So I guess we both agree Enterprise is number three. And then I would go original series, Voyager, and then the animated series.
Okay. Right. Now, so...
We should also maybe just give a little overview of each of the seasons, or each of the series, and kind of give a breakdown on what they're about.
Okay, well, let's talk about your list, and then we can break down. So what about Deep Space Nine that's so beloved to you that you think is makes that number one?
I believe I like Deep Space Nine as number one because Deep Space Nine, to me, had the most overarching story as any Star Trek series. Again, the original series, Next Generation, mostly Voyager, and a lot of Enterprise. They're mostly just episodic. You know, Enterprise did have some arc episodes, mm-hmm. and they had one really strong arc season, which was season three. But for the overall part, it didn't have like this overall like building story. They just got bigger and bigger as it went on. And to me, that tying together and the story that just flows between episode to episode is what made Deep Space Nine so great to me.
Right. And then what did you enjoy about The Next Generation? What that makes that your number two?
Next Generation was my number two because I grew up with it. I mean, my dad had played the original series from when I was a kid, but Next Generation was new when I was a kid. Right. So, I grew up with that, so that was, you know, it really made me attached to it.
And then Enterprise?
Enterprise also had some arcs in it. They had stronger arcs than most other series, except for Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. So those arcs, the Temporal Prime Directive, such a brilliant subplot that, you know, spanned from the first season to the last season. And I'm so sad Enterprise got cut short. Yeah, it got canceled. They were actually talking about the shadowed figure actually being Archer from the future. Mm. And so Archer, like, sending people back to stop himself as he was done, that's really interesting.
Right.
Crazy, like, circle of time travel whodunit
sure.
thing.
Sure.
And, that was really great.
And the original series?
Well, it started it all. He gave us our strongest characters, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. They are, without a doubt, the strongest characters in Star Trek. Although I rate them so down on the list, it's because they're still trying to figure stuff out. Stuff's inconsistent. Stuff is potentially canon breaking. It's great, and they did an amazing job for the time it was.
Right.
It just didn't have any like overall story. It was really episodic, and they were still trying to figure things out. So,
well, and how about we go down to Voyager?
Most of Voyager's canon breaking.
Not all of it.
Oh, there's a lot of Voyager.
There's some foibles. There's some problems here and there.
And then it's also got the least likable characters of all the series. The only character I like through the entire series is the Doctor. He's not even a real person.
Okay.
And then I like Seven of Nine second best, but she's only in four of the seasons, so it's not like she's like a character I can look forward to seeing for the first three seasons.
She's not there for a long time. Animated series, anything you want to say about it?
Not really. I like you. I'm probably least familiar with it as all of them. I've only watched it all the way through once.
Yeah, I mean, I have watched them, but it's been, like I said, a long time. I want to kind of go into my ideas behind it. So what makes the original series top for me is, first, it is the original. So that's what's so important to me, that you have all these groundbreaking ideas, even to the idea of the design of the Enterprise. It's such, if you think about it, and if you stand away from the whole culture of it, and you just think about the Enterprise, it's a strange-looking spaceship.
It is, and it's iconic. And
it's become so iconic, and we don't even think about it anymore. It's like, that's the Enterprise, it's whatever.
And Gene Roddenberry had to fight them to not make it a rocket ship. Because rocket ships were like, well, it's space, it's got to be a rocket, right?
Right. So, and that's the thing, is that there's so many different things. I mean, they've come up with the transporter.
The transporter was there to save them money so they didn't have to do shuttlecraft shots every time they wanted to go someplace.
Even the setup of the bridge is become so much of a iconic thing that we almost expect a bridge to look like that. I mean, if you go back to like any kind of, if you go onto any naval ship, even today, the bridge doesn't really look like that. You know, a naval ship with a bridge, it might have a captain's chair, but it's not like centered in the middle, and it's not like how they designed it. So there's even the design purpose, it was really, I think it's just brilliant that Gene Roddenberry had the idea of marrying the naval idea of ranks and everything, and putting into a spaceship and carrying on with that naval tradition as well, I thought was a fantastic idea. And then obviously, just outside the creation of the world of Star Trek in the original series, then you have all the crew. You have Kirk, Spock, McCoy, everybody, Sulu, and they're all so iconic. I mean, like every one of them are just like, you know, like, yeah, they're just beautiful. They're just everyone together. It worked so well. And then in the end, the other thing is, even though they are episodic, like you were saying, like there's like just like each episode has its own little story.
It's all self-contained and whatnot.
Yeah, but you know what I liked about it was that they handled a lot of issues that were, especially at that day in, you know, the 1960s. I think that
It's great. They and the allegory, and he's trying to tell stories that mean something,
absolutely.
Which I always appreciate about Star Trek and in the movies.
Right.
When they're trying to tell a story with meaning.
Yeah, exactly. So that was big for me for the original series. My next was, like I said, Next Generation. I thought Next Generation, other than maybe the first season, which is a little weak at certain points, but I think they were just trying to figure things out at that point, even the actors trying to figure out the characters. I think they carried on the tradition really well. They enhanced the universe of Star Trek so much through those. I mean, they had so many seasons to do that, so that was just beautiful. And each one of those actors were just very capable of handling those roles and doing that just in the right kind of temper for television. So,
and it's a spinoff show, and they hit lightning in a bottle twice. The original series, the cast worked beautifully together. The Next Generation, the cast worked beautifully together.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you couldn't ask for anything better. There's so much, like, and again, the episodes, again, they seem to carry on that kind of, the stories behind everything. It's so great of, there, like you said, the allegory behind everything. Not every episode, but there's a lot there. So it can be used as a teaching thing as well. Enterprise, I thought, is the best modern version of a television show for Star Trek as of yet. I love the idea of a crew going out there exploring just for exploration purposes. And, you have Captain Archer, who has that heart of the explorer. And I think that was really perfect how they did that. I that's what I enjoyed in the original series. And I think they kind of like brought that feeling back in Enterprise. They're out there alone, they make friends, and they have like they're friends with the the Vulcans. It's a little
kind of
a little strange.
I mean, Vulcans are like, you know, like holding the carrot in front of them that don't ever let them bite it.
Right, right.
That's almost kind of taunting.
Yeah, no, I mean the Vulcans were kind of dicks, but anyways, I thought Enterprise had a great feel to it, and I just love the idea that maybe all the technology isn't all worked out. You know, like
I mean, they had no like. They get torpedoes like later on in the series, a couple episodes in, and then you know they developed like force fields around season two, like all this stuff, like you know,
right? And they don't even like they're like nervous about using the transporter. They just don't trust it,
and for good reason. When they beam up the guy in the windstorm, they beam them up with a whole bunch of leaves stuck in them.
Yeah, right.
That looked like it would have been that stung a little bit.
Here's the thing. My next Deep Space Nine, this is where I'm going to kind of like go off a little bit from you, is that I did not...
Gasp.
I did not like... I don't love the characters. I don't hate the characters. I just don't love the characters. I don't fall in love with anybody. I think they're all good characters. I think they're all interesting characters. But I just don't have any kind of affinity to them.
Quark and Odo. Those are the ones I fell in love with immediately. And a lot of the characters I really didn't like for a long time. You know,
Benjamin Sisko's hard to like. He's not a bad guy, and he's very good at what he does, but he's not like, you don't like him.
He's hard to like because he's such a dick to Picard. After you've seen Picard for all these seasons, and you're like, oh, I love Picard. Picard's my captain. And then this guy is just cold and mean to him over something he had no physical control over.
I know, you don't, but I can understand if you lost your wife and someone you loved, and that, you know, he might attach Picard to that in some way. Just to go back, so everyone doesn't know, this was the Battle of the Borg with, what was it? The
Wolf 359.
Yeah, there's a big battle, and... what happens is Benjamin Sisko, who is the commander in Deep Space Nine, his wife gets killed. He's during that battle, and he kind of blames Picard in a strange way, which I don't really follow that through either. But he has his reservations. He has his feelings, and you know, whatever, it is what it is.
But the nice thing about Deep Space Nine to me is that yeah, the characters are really hard to like in the beginning, but they I think of all the Star Trek series, these characters, because there's an arc in the story, the characters arc too. Because Picard, he's pretty much the same person throughout all the seven seasons.
Well,
Kirk,
well, he definitely develops after season one.
A little bit, but I mean, like, you see, like, who he is the same. I mean, the actors trying to figure out their characters, that's one thing, having that personality develop. But I mean, as far as, like, the character themselves, like, look at Bashir. Bashir. Tripping over every woman he sees, trying to stumble and talk to them, total right. Dork. And then, like, I really don't like him. And then he's got this secret past.
Yeah, I mean, there's some cool stories behind it.
And then he becomes super interesting. Like, Kira, I don't like her most of it because she's really whiny. She's got some really strong episodes, but I don't really, really start to like her until season 7 when she's promoted to colonel and she's in love with Odo. I think being in love with Odo mellowed her out a lot. Mm-hmm. Garak, I mean, like, the thing is with the Deep Space Nine is, like, your main characters, like your Starfleet people, I don't like them all that much. It's the secondary characters that are so great. Garak, amazing. Quark, amazing.
Right.
Gul Dukat, great. Love him as a bad guy. So awesome.
Right.
Kai Wen, I can't stand her every time she comes on screen.
But she's a great villain.
But she's great at, yeah, and it's great that she made me feel that way every single time I saw her, or heard her voice, or heard her name. I'm just like, oh, I just can't stand. But I mean, like no other Star Trek kind of gave me that feeling from characters. Yeah, I didn't like him in the beginning, or yeah, maybe I didn't like him at the end, but they just, I mean, they made me feel a lot more.
Right.
Like, opinionated about them, I think, than some of the other characters.
I know what you're saying. It's just that there's a lot that it didn't do for me. And the one other thing that I feel it's missing. Well, okay, two things. One is, even though they have the Defiant and they do some exploration, it's mostly trying to, like, you know.
The main mission is to bring Bajor into the Federation. That's how Deep Space Nine is set up. And that's, I don't even know if they even succeed at the end. I can't remember. I haven't seen the ending in a while.
I thought they did. But it's more, to me, was in the end, I mean, like, the Defiant was there to basically help combat the Dominion and help the Deep Space Nine crew. And there's not as much exploration. There's a little. Don't get me wrong. There's
Deep Space Nine is not about exploration.
It's all like a war.
It's the Western frontier and the
intrigue, you know, of war. And I think they developed a lot of things. Like the Cardassians had a great society that they kind of expanded on, which is great. The Dominion had a lot there. You know, the big, you know, the war and everything that went with it.
Also had our character actors, Jeffrey Combs playing Wayoon, the Vorta, and then we had like these like Ziggy Pop also playing a Vorta, and like all these like crazy little cameos, and we had him playing, Jeffrey Combs also playing Chief Inspector Brunt. I love how they fleshed out the Ferengi stories.
Yeah, the Ferengi was brought into more. But see, this is my thing. In the end, it's like, first, they're not like on a starship, so they can't go off and like explore. And secondly, it's all about just that, you know, if it's either the Cardassians and trying to mess things up, or you have the Dominion and the war there, you know, it's all... That's all really the stories are about. I mean, there's a couple, like we've talked before, there's other stories that have other meanings behind them, but like that allegory is a little bit missing from this show.
Yeah, it's not Star Trek in traditional sense, and I think that's also part of why I liked it, because it gave me something different.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I don't ever hate it. It's just it didn't do anything for me.
The first two seasons are very hard to watch. I will grant that. For people who haven't seen it, if you ask me, I've got a cheat sheet that I got actually from Transporter Room 3 podcast. They kind of like went through and they narrowed out a lot of the episodes you don't really need to watch in the first two seasons to make it a lot easier to watch. I've given it to a couple of my friends, and they've been able to get to Deep Space Nine a lot easier by skipping a lot of the episodes
that don't have any meaning in the first two episodes. There's some you can definitely skip, yeah.
But season three going forward, when they get the Defiant, and then Worf comes on in season four, I mean, the show just gets so much better, like, you know, from season three on.
Yeah, and then Voyager, here's my thing with Voyager. I actually like some of the characters better than you like them. I like Captain Janeway. I like Tuvok. I love the Doctor. The Doctor's great. I even like Tom Paris. He's great. It's just like there's a lot there I enjoy, but they seem to... There are things, there are episodes where they go completely off the rails, which is just... It's silly. I actually just rewatched that, the one where they go to Warp 10, and Tom Paris turns into...
And the lizard, and he abducts Janeway, and then they have lizard babies, and then they don't pick up the lizard
babies. They leave the lizard babies.
If this was any other, like, starship, they would have taken those, because that would have been, like, that's, like, interfering with whatever world they left those things on.
Absolutely.
That is so, like...
They're just like, we just left them there. Chakotay was like, I was just tired that day. I couldn't go fishing for those damn things. They're all swimming around.
Just energize them. Beam them up. They're probably the only kind of that life form on the planet.
That's got to be maybe the worst episode, period, out of all Voyager. Because it doesn't make any sense.
And the Doctor converted them from full lizards back to humans just to make a whole bunch of that antidote, because basically all he needed is their old medical records and their old DNA, and he just... restores the DNA sequences to how it used to be.
Well, not
just prepare that for all the members of the crew, warp home, and then we can deal with the aftermath.
Well, not even that. It's just like, my feeling was that, it's like, what part of, okay, so we're evolving to a fish creature?
Lizard salamander guy?
I mean, that's where we're going to. That seems like we're more devolving.
That looks like a de-evolving, like it happened in the Next Generation episode, where people de-evolved into lizards, into like weird fish things, into spiders, into...
That makes a little more sense, but it's so silly to me. So
how is that a higher form of life?
I just think whoever wrote that story and why the, you know, whoever was producing the show at the time didn't go like, no, we're not doing that.
I feel like the people, a lot of the writers on Voyager forgot that... If it goes on screen on Star Trek, this is canon.
Yeah.
I feel like they didn't... I feel like they, like... I mean, they've had the original series, they've had Deep Space Nine, they've had Next Generation, and they're writing the stuff, and they're not thinking about the grander scheme that is Star Trek.
Right. And even, like, the idea of going to Warp 10, and maybe that, like, you're, like... What do they say? You're everywhere...
Everywhere at once.
Once. okay. I mean, I don't really get it, but I understand maybe it's like going beyond what our human ability
is.
I get that. Okay, cool. But the rest of the story just falls apart. But that just being said, there are some really off episodes in there, but there are some episodes I think that are really well done, and I like the idea. Again, it's they're more of a Lost in Space idea, but I do like the idea of that they're out there exploring, even though every time Janeway goes, oh, let's look at this nebula, oh, let's look at this planet, let's look at this asteroid system, always ends up biting them in the ass. Because it always, I mean, there's like, you know, it screws that, you know, I just would be like, you know, Captain, can we just stop looking at things and just let's go, you know?
I like the episode where Seven of Nine kind of goes crazy and she's thinking there's a huge conspiracy theory. And I'm really inclined to believe the one against Janeway.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That one makes so much sense. And then Janeway, of course, talks her out of it because she's Janeway.
She's like, that can't happen.
But she's like, well, this started, it became your friend, and I took you out of the Board Collective, and this and this. And like, but yeah, just because you did it doesn't mean all of Seven of Nine's conspiracy theories against you aren't true, because her conspiracy theory came out, like, you know, she purposely stranded them in the Delta Quadrant and they're trying to amass technology and like all this stuff like that. And it's interesting. And since I don't like Janeway all that much and I do like Seven of Nine, I'm inclined to believe her.
I don't know. I actually even like the, how Jane, you know, the actress there, portrays Janeway and how she kind of, she has to do this. I think that was a hard role to play because, you know, you have to play, you can't play it masculine, but you can't play it so feminine.
No, she did play it very masculine. Every time she got slightly upset, her man voice came out. It was always really bothering me.
But you
got
to talk with authority, and it's like
you can speak with authority without trying to sound like a man.
But she does have that kind of timbre in her voice anyways. I guess what I was trying to say is that I think she was trying to walk that balancing beam, and I think that's a hard thing even now in our society. I mean, we have women who are in charge and are, you know, are can be our bosses or can be people in a high ranking authority, but we're always very critical on how women are viewed, because either they're, you know, they're like either too strong or they're too weak, and it's a hard thing. I wouldn't want to be a woman in that position because I think that'd be very difficult.
You know, Kate Mulgrew, she played the first female captain of a series. So, I mean, I know she did have a lot of pressure on her. And then when they brought in Seven of Nine, she really resented the fact that she was almost kind of replaced as the main female character, mm-hmm. as far as her popularity goes. Because
the problem was is that they never really did much more with Janeway. I mean, she was kind of a two-dimensional figure. You're the captain. It's sort of like Sisko. It's like, Sisko's a great character, but there's not much more story between but him liking baseball and Cajun food and Jake. That's about it.
Sisko also grows. They declare him the emissary, and he's very doubtful at first. And then, like, this one episode, I can't remember the name of it, but it's the episode where the Pa Wraith inhabits Jake, and Kira gets taken by the one of the prophets, mm-hmm. and they're going to be the showdown on Deep Space Nine, and Sisko has grown in faith so much, mm-hmm. at this point, and he's had a false emissary challenge him, and he's, you know, come through the, you know, as the true emissary, and he's like, you know, had some run-ins with Starfleet about you know, his role as a captain of the space station and trying to enable Bajor to join the Federation, and sometimes he's turned that down or he's postponed it in order to please the Bajoran people in this role as the emissary, and he shows so much faith. He believes that the prophets won't allow Jake to get hurt, even though he's taken over by a Pa Wraith, even though there's going to be this huge fight. He believes that he's going to be okay because he's their emissary. He believes his son's going to be okay because he's their emissary, and that they know that Jake is a loved one of his. And he shows so much faith, and Kai wins there. And Worf has got this thing set up in Ops where they could, you know, do a baryon sweep or something, and it'll push the Pa Wraiths out of the space station because they're worried they might destroy the space station. And Sisko's got all this faith, and everyone's evacuating, but Kai Wynn goes, and she triggers this thing because Kai Wynn, the spiritual leader of Bajor, she doesn't have an ounce of the faith that Sisko has.
But here's the thing.
And his character grew. And
But this is my thing is, Sisko actually met them. He went into the wormhole, and he actually, like, face-to-face had conversations with them.
I'm pretty sure Quark did, too, in the Grand Nagus.
Yeah, but maybe they did, but they were not the emissary. And where Kaiwyn never, I don't think she ever had that experience. Not that
no,
I recall.
But she was.
Kaiwyn was a political fraud. I mean, she was the spiritual leader because she was elected that way.
All she wanted was power.
Was it the first one?
Opaka.
Opaka. She was the best. I loved her. When I first met her,
it's like two episodes.
I know she was just like there's something about her. I just loved immediately. And then when Kai went,
she was serene and she seemed genuine and she seemed kind
and caring and really sincerely. But you know,
then she dies on a planet where you can never really die. But if you do die, you can't leave because you're bound to the planet
over and over again. It's painful. Anyways, that's not what happens. That's what I think is the problem, is that Janeway was a two-dimensional character. I agree with you, Sisko grew a little more. I don't think Janeway ever grew as much. I think that's a fault of the writers. I think they were looking for something different because they knew the show needed a boost, and that's probably why they changed. They brought in, 7 of 9.
Oh, yeah, it did need a change because the show was never consistent. Like, the original series, I mean, it had some really good episodes, and it was good for the most part. Then you've got Next Generation, which had a slow first couple seasons, but then it got better. Like, you know, from season 3 on, it just got better and better and better and better. Deep Space Nine, first couple seasons are slow, but it got better and better and better and better. And then you've got Voyager, and the show is stagnant as far as quality goes. You've got some great episodes, you've got some terrible episodes, and you've got some really terrible episodes. And they're jumbled up randomly throughout every single season.
Right. Yeah, there's not like one like season you can point to and say, this is a great season.
I can't point to any.
There's some great episodes I really like.
And I'm not one of those Voyager haters. I have seen Voyager all the way through like 3 times. I'm almost done with my 4th watch to a Voyager, so it's not like I'm one of those people that I've just only seen it once, only seen part of it. I've seen Voyager a lot, and like I said, like, you know, with Deep Space Nine, Kira, I never liked Kira, and on this like 4th or 5th rewatch of Deep Space Nine, I'm starting to like Kira in season 7. Like, she's genuinely becoming a lot more likable in season 7 to me, and this is on many, many watch throughs, and Voyager, it hasn't really gotten there for me. And the best 2 episodes, Year of Hell, Part 1 and 2, it's non sequitur. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even matter.
Right, right. I do. There's certain things that once in a while when Voyager's out there in space and they're exploring or they're meeting a different race and they kind of have to deal with a smaller issue. I do enjoy those. I like the exploration aspect of it. I like I just like how the characters start to form, but they are half-baked in the end. They'd never quite come out completely done.
In a way, it's most like the original series, whereas everything's new. Everything's new. They're exploring. Everything's kind of new, but it doesn't. They don't have the strength of the McCoy, Spock, and Kirk dynamic. Like, right. There isn't really that dynamic at all.
Well, the same reason I like Enterprise, the same reason is that they're out there. Everything's new. They're seeing things the first time. They're kind of on the going by the seat of their pants, you know. And there's
no prime directive. There's no real like Starfleet's. Right. There's no Federation. The Starfleet, I guess, is the one commissioning the ships, but there's no Federation.
Right.
Everything's brand new, and it's really cool seeing it grow. And it's such a shame it was canceled before we were able to see the Romulan War.
Right.
You know. Any other important foundings of the Federation.
But again, you know, in Enterprise, what I enjoyed was that the crew is likable. There's a lot of likable people there that you can get into, and even though it only goes 3 seasons, right, for Enterprise?
4
seasons, okay. Yeah, because they were, you know, it's so short, you don't get into it right away, but I almost, after maybe halfway through the first season, I'm into the characters. I really like them, you know. It didn't take me long.
Yeah, I loved it. And a lot of people say they hate Enterprise because Scott Bakula was in Quantum Leap. I'm like, what does that have to do with anything?
I think
Quantum Leap's its own show and Enterprise is its own show.
Yeah, and I think that he did a great job. I think he had that feel, like I said, he had the heart of the explorer, but he was also, you know, could be a stern and a straightforward guy. But then there's once in a while you could see him kind of cut loose in the characters as well. So
I thought all the cast was great. All the Vulcans were very good at being Vulcans.
Trip was great.
Trip was great.
Yeah, he really brought a lot to it.
You know, Porthos really nailed being a dog.
What? That was the best dog.
Then you had Dr. Phlox. He was great.
Yeah, he was interesting.
With this like weird society of like seven wives and seven husbands for the seven wives for each of the wives. It's like it was crazy.
Yeah, it was very odd. Yeah, there's different thing going on there. And then, so I thought that had a nice feel to it. So, and then lastly, and my list was the anime series. A couple things hold me back on the anime series. The company that made it, Filmation, they just had, I mean, they're notorious for cutting back on animation using
doing it on the cheap.
Yeah, they just keep on redoing the same clip. And I grew up on Filmation. I grew up not only with the animated series for Star Trek, but also they did Batman and Robin when I was growing up. They did a couple different superhero ones, and then they did He-Man, and it's the same thing.
Yeah, I watched He-Man.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, yep. You know, He-Man was wildly successful, and it was the same thing. They would just write, they would have these like same clips they would play for the same thing over and over again, and it's like, can you just like break down and make a, you know, have a couple of different cells painted by your artist? I mean, it's like they were really cheap how they did things, and the animated series suffered for that. Even though you have the voicing of the original cast, and you actually have some pretty well written scripts for cartoon.
Yeah, for a cartoon, they had some really nice scripts. Yesteryear, definitely a prime example. And James Doohan, you know, really flexed his voice muscles because he did so many different voices for that other than just Scotty. I want to say he did like over 20 voices for the show. Like, he did an incredible amount of voices for the show. I don't have the actual number in front of me. I just remember reading that he did a ton of work for the show. Voice work goes.
It's been on my thing. I've been get into stuff like that, but I keep on having shows creep up like Daredevil. I gotta like watch now. So I mean,
I'm on like episode 5 of that.
Yeah, it's great, but we're not talking about Daredevil.
this is not the Daredevil podcast.
but there's like all these different like episodes. I mean that I want to get back and I want to watch all the animated series, but like you only have so many limited time. So it's something on my list to go back to. And maybe I'll change my tune on that, but it is the bottom of my list.
It also has canon breaking things in it, like a utility belt that lets you walk out in space. And Next Generation, a whole century later, they're still wearing spacesuits to walk out on the hull of the ship.
Right.
So, I mean, you only take it with a grain of salt. You know, also, like, I think in the original canon, like, I don't think Robert April was really in canon until the animated series.
Yeah.
And if you looked at the J.J.
Star Trek ongoing,
like Robert April was the original Captain Enterprise, so it seems like the J.J. verse is a little bit adapting of the animated series as canon, whereas I don't know if the original series and the original prime timeline really account for
I was aware of Robert April, you know, a long, long time ago back in the...
Well, he's in the cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. I probably watched it when I was a kid and I didn't realize who it was, but I read about Robert April later on and just saying that he was the original captain of the Enterprise, and then you had Pike and then Kirk. So that was definitely... I did know about April as the captain of the Enterprise, the first captain of the Enterprise.
Okay.
And I thought that they said that he actually fought during the Federation Klingon War, but that might have changed since then. I read. I mean, like again, that was back in the 80s.
Well, that would be really interesting if Axanar shows us that, because there's the creation of the Enterprise at Axanar, which is what the Axanar thing is doing. And if you guys watch that video, they're saying like you know that Garth had a crazy idea. Have to fight the battle there at Axanar, and I'm thinking that maybe part of that crazy idea is that they're going to finish the ships in the middle of the battle, and if Robert April is the first captain of the Enterprise, maybe we can see Robert April take the Enterprise out of space dock and beat those D7s because they kind of need something to beat the D7s in the movie. So, I mean, this is wild speculation on my part.
Right.
But I think it'd be really interesting. You know, that would maybe, you know, I know the fan things aren't canon, but it might add more to the possible canon, I guess. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, if the future of Star Trek is going to be in the JJ-verse, anything that happens in the prime timeline by fans might as well be canon if CBS and Paramount have abandoned the prime timeline.
Who knows?
But we don't know.
We don't know anything. Yeah, it's pretty up in the air. There might be something there, hopefully. I'll be cool to see no matter what, because that just looks like it's going to be great.
Can't wait for Exodar. Cannot wait.
Yeah, so, again, so I guess where we differ is the big time is our ranking on Deep Space Nine and the original series. Tell me some of the things so I can get frothingly mad at you about the original series that holds you back on that.
Just some of the stories just, like, don't do it for me, like, at all. Like, they just drive me crazy. Like, Trelane.
Trelane's a hard one.
I can't stand that episode. It's so Squire, hard to watch.
So anyone who doesn't know Trelane, it's the Squire of Gathos?
Gothos.
Gothos, yeah, or something. So he's sort of a Q-like character. He's this omnipotent, childlike character.
With none of the charisma of Q.
Right.
I love Q. Q is like one of my favorite characters. I love how he pops up in the Voyager. He pops up in Deep Space Nine for one episode. He's all over Next Generation. He's like one of my favorite characters. And that this guy's a Q, he's like the least likable Q I've ever heard of.
Well, that no one ever says he's Q, but there is some people say like maybe he was a young Q.
A proto-Q race or something like that.
Yeah, something of that nature. But he's like this, he can make anything happen with in this sphere of this machine that he needs on this planet, and he basically makes the crew. He brings the crew down to his planet, and he makes their life a living hell. He's trying to, you know, to dance with the women and woo the women. The women could really care less. And then Kirk basically challenges them, and they have to. Trelane chases Kirk around, trying to kill him, and. It has some interesting points to it, but it's still...
Then Trelane's parents come and spank him.
Yeah.
And we're sorry, our child was acting out.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh, that hurts.
That's a hard one.
That's really hard to like.
But what's the one where... what's the Next Generation where they go to the casino? What the hell is that?
The Casino Royale. That's actually the name of the episode.
Oh, I can't stand that one. That one I can't watch. I've watched it twice, and I'm just like, this is... Terrible.
I like it. I like how like they point out that the book is so terrible. The guy that gets stuck there, he's like, you know, this is the only piece of literature they had to base this world off for me. You know, they tried to do it to keep me alive, but they had no idea about my culture, so they just assumed everything in this book was how my culture was.
Right.
And I love all the interactions of Data gambling.
It's funny, it's so crappy looking.
I can see how it grates against... Grates against you. I can see how people might not like it, but there's like little character things with Data. I love that episode specifically for all the stuff Data does.
Right.
Like he's gambling and he gets the girl to blow on the dice, and like he's learning how to like, you know, bluff and gamble because
right.
He's like, we've seen her play poker in a previous episode or something. So seeing Data in that mode was really interesting to me.
Right. No, I mean there's some cool parts, but I mean just that's the same thing. It's like I think every series has a couple episodes you're just like, what the heck? I mean, the one that gets me crazy on, there's a few actually in the original series. The one is where
I know there's more, I just can't think
Kirk
of any.
Loses his memory for some reason, and he's down on this planet. He falls in love with like this Native American Indian girl. It's just like
he always falls in love with somebody.
No, but this is just like it's not a good episode, and it's hard to. I forgot the name of it right now, but it's just hard to watch. There's another one where he's there's some guy who's from a different universe.
Like most episodes in season three, where they're just like some random bad guy of the week, and they're just not as good as the first two seasons.
Yeah, not all of season three is bad.
Well, yeah, granted, but I mean everything. There's gonna be the gems in everything.
Yeah, there's a couple.
There's gems in Voyager every now and then.
Yeah, right. Every once in a while. No, but it's like I mean you point out. The Trelane, you know, the Squire of Gathos, which is not a likable episode.
Well, that to me was just the one that stuck out the most as being one I really didn't like. I can't think of any other one else because I'm not as
You don't have to point out, yeah, but like what is the overall feeling in the end? It's just that it's all over the place.
Yeah,
like you like everything really organized in your universe. I've been noticing.
Yes,
you like everything should make all sense. And here's the thing: is yes. like I like that it's there's a lot of things that aren't quite figured out, and they say things once in a while that doesn't make
like the star dates don't match up with anything.
They don't make sense at all.
Like the warp factors aren't the same as they are in the movies and in the Next Generation. Like all this stuff, like is a little like the math on things. I know it's all pseudoscience math, but still, like the math on things is sure. a lot different when you look at it. Most of it's like background stuff that I don't like, I guess, in the original series. Because like, I love Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, and to this day they are the strongest core characters. But like, I differ between them and Deep Space Nine or Next Generation. Like, really, they have like better episode quality overall, as far as story goes. I think. I mean, I know the original series is doing more allegory and really trying to tell like morals probably a lot harder than the other series are, and maybe because they're trying so hard to be an ace, a modern day for the 60s Aesop's Fables, maybe the stories suffer for the message they're trying to tell.
I don't think they suffer. I think they actually come across a little better. I think a lot of people get hung up on is the campiness of it. And the old sets and
it is a little hard to watch for the modern eye. You're so used to seeing things that look just so much nicer. But I really enjoyed the Star Trek Continues episodes, and they made the sets look exactly the same. Right. But the stories have all been super high quality, and I've really enjoyed the stories for all the episodes of Star Trek Continues so far. So I mean, it's not just the campiness and the look of it.
But I know that holds a lot of people back.
That does hold a lot of people back, and one of our listeners, Maria, she's actually started watching the original series after she listened to our podcast. So shout out to Maria. That's cool. Awesome. That
hope you enjoy it because it's my favorite.
Yeah.
So I mean, I got a lot of love for the original series. I always felt that to me, the Next Generation, I thought picked up and took that the original series and polished it into a better. Understanding of that universe and still kept on that same tradition. That's what I love about Next Gen. That's why it's second for me, because it's like it carries on and it keeps on that same feeling as what I got for the original series.
Yeah, it's definitely great. And the nostalgic factor that I grew up with it is one thing. Because Deep Space Nine, I did watch as it came on live till about like season like 2 or 3, and then like I just kind of lost it, I guess.
I did too. I watched it for a while, and I was like, what is this?
So my first time all the way through was probably sometime in 2008. My first time seeing it all the way through. And then, I've tried to watch it like all the way through like once a year, like once every 2 years or whatever it is since. Because I did fall in love with it once I got past the hard first couple seasons.
Yeah, it's definitely... when that came out too, it was so different compared to Next Generation. There were so many different factors. I mean, that they weren't on a spaceship, and that there was like you're only kind of like bouncing between like three or four places mainly through the stories. It kind of got a little.
It felt restricted because you weren't seeing new places every single episode.
Right.
Which, they were in the new places were just the same soundstage rearranged.
Right, exactly. But I mean, I think they did grow, and it did help a lot over time. They developed the characters and the backstories to all the side characters. It's just, again, Deep Space Nine, I don't have a lot of love. I think you're right. A lot of the side characters are more interesting than the main characters.
And the Federation characters, definitely.
Which is kind of sad because, I mean, it's like you should like the Federation characters. You should identify with them and, you end up being like, oh, I like Quark way better, than anybody.
Quark's like probably my favorite character. Garak's probably my favorite character, but Quark's like a close second. And then Martok is great. I love Martok.
Yeah, but they're all so slimy. They're all such like they're always trying to like get the Quark's always trying to cheat people. Garak's got all these backstory of wickedness and torture and espionage. It's just they don't it's like You wouldn't want to know that person in real life.
No, but
like
that's what's great about television is that you've got this great interesting character that it would be horrible to know this person in real life, but he's so interesting to see on screen and how he interacts with other people.
But like where I would love to be like in the same room with Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, where I'd love to be in the same room with Data and Picard,
Riker,
and Guinan. So, but no, but I mean, it's like those are like you just want to be with those people. It's like this is like, you know, you're drawn to them.
Yeah, definitely.
How they're written, how the actors portray them, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they're definitely really likable, and that does make a stark difference between the original series, Next Generation, than, you know, over Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine, one of the things I love about it, Section 31. I loved that, you know, the Federation is, this, you know, peacekeeping thing, and, you know, they don't do anything nefarious, but, you know, the Romulans have the Tal Shiar, the Cardassians have the Obsidian Order, and the Federation has Section 31.
Yeah.
I love Section 31 episodes.
I like the idea of Section 31, but I'm with the sort of the camp. There's some people that really feel that the Federation should never have had a Section 31, and they think it's an affront to the idea of what the Federation and Starfleet's about. But
look at any of the admirals. Even before Section 31 came out, all the admirals are pretty much corrupt. I don't know, like, I don't know how it happened, but
every Kirk wasn't.
He, you know,
don't you
disobeyed orders a lot.
He does that all the time.
Well, again, that didn't change between when he was a captain, but still, I mean, admirals don't have a good track record of usually being good people.
I like Section 31 as a story plot, and there's a lot of stuff that you can play around with. It's a fun idea,
but they didn't really come up till season 7 of Deep Space Nine, so they didn't have much time to play with it. And then they brought it into Enterprise, which is great because it's there before the foundation of the Federation, which is great.
Right, but I guess what my feeling is that I kind of wanted, not that I wanted or anything, but I kind of felt that it kind of moved away from what, you know, the premise of what the Federation was and our society was supposed to be, that there's still this clandestine spying, espionage, you know, dirty work kind of, you know, stuff going on.
So. Definitely. So that's pretty much it for the how we rate things. And again, I really wanted to go into this because if we're talking about things in the future, I kind of want you guys, want everyone to know like where we're coming from.
Right.
So that whenever we say something about a specific series or whatever, it's, you know, this is kind of where we're coming
from. Let me boil it down to this: is Dave wants to have the episodic, grand, sweeping arc through a storyline that what really gets him going. He likes that all the canon is within its boundaries. It doesn't kind of move out of canon. Because if it does, Dave will tell you about it, and he will be pissed off. Where I like the allegory. I like the message behind the stories. And I like the offbeatness of episodes and not everything has to make sense all the time. But that's where we differ. But that's still good.
And talking about offbeat and referring to offbeatness.
You are the most beautiful woman in the galaxy. You don't know how long I've wanted to tell you that.
But you're afraid.
Yes.
Of me?
Of us, of what we might become. Then you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
That's more than I expected.
Is it as much as you hoped?
To hope is to recognize the possibility. I had only dreams.
Dreams can be dangerous.
Not these dreams. I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
Careful. Putting me on a pedestal so high you may not be able to reach me.
Then I'll learn how to fly. You are the heart in my day and the soul in my night.
We lost two more relays. I can't!
Shut up, kid.
About things being strange, I mean, we've got Angel One.
Angel One. So for Riker scores, we're going to talk about what Riker scored. So,
he puts on this green open-chested outfit because on
his Angel, nipples hanging out too.
it's a wonder they didn't give him a ring.
So let's get a little background. So Riker, being the man of the ladies, they have to go to a planet that one of the Federation's freighters, the Odin, had crash landed some 7 years ago. They go to this planet called Angel One, and it's a female-dominated society. They're run by these mistresses as leaders, and they're known as the Elected One. And the males are actually in smaller stature, and the women are a little bit larger.
And the guys are small and hairless, and they're like really timid, and they're like little serving eunuchs almost.
Yeah. They're still male, but they don't have the Riker feel to it. So they go down to it, and they go down to the planet, and they request an audience with the mistress Beata. And she is the kind of the one of the leaders of the six leaders of the planet Angel One, and they're requesting to get the survivors of the Odin. And there's a whole little story there where the people of the Odin are kind of like giving the idea of that men and women can be equal, and that the authorities don't even want to hear this.
Yeah, there should be no subservient of anything.
Yeah. So, but Riker. Decides to do a little cultural
diplomacy.
Yeah,
this is diplomacy because he puts on their men's garb,
right.
Which is very open chested,
very all the way down to his navel,
like a green lace.
Green lace. Like I said, his hairy chest, his nipple hanging out. He has some bizarre earring thing on his ear.
Almost kind of reminiscent of a Bajoran earring, I think.
Or a pirate. I'm not quite sure what's going on. Maybe a gay pirate, but he...
And we know Riker isn't.
No, but he's definitely... but it's very... it's a funny outfit. And so he goes, and Mistress Beata is quite taken by him.
And he gives her this like horrible little prop as like a gift to their people.
It's like he probably bought it at some like pawn shop or some like little like you know those little like shops you go into like when you're on vacation somewhere. It's like all the crap, you know, the little tchotchkes you buy for people.
It's the gift shop right before you leave the island.
Yeah, it was the Enterprise gift shop you got it at.
It's like right before you get to the transporter room. It's like, oh, what can I give to the leader so she'll sleep with me?
It lights up. It is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. He didn't even have to give it to her because like she was ready to like throw down right there.
Oh, she probably never seen so much hair on a man ever before in her life.
Yeah, she's like, oh, this hair. Ooh, I can't getting lost in it.
I bet I could comb it.
He probably could do a comb over on Picard with it. So we got Riker basically making it with the leader of a world. World leader.
So Riker,
put that on your resume.
I'm sure Riker's got it on his resume.
Starfleet's like, ooh, slept with a world leader.
And negotiated peace. And kept him from killing, you know, these are all like small, like, you know, bullet points underneath slept with the leader.
All these little things that came from
it's like Angel One, slept with the leader, and then all the small bullet points. It's like, you know, I saved these people from getting, you know, executed on a right. One-way transporter that transports them into oblivion. And you know, she moved them to the other side of the world, but they're still alive. I guess
they're living in Antarctica. Yeah, Angel fine. One.
They're fine
fighting off grizzly bears. So that was after, I believe after we got, because we did the last time we talked to Riker, it was him with Deanna. I think this is the next story that we actually see Riker getting it on with another female.
Alien.
Yeah. Well, an alien.
Doesn't matter.
As long as there's something to be done.
Yeah, we decided to go with this one because I had no burning desire to speak about Angel One any other way. But... We do take fan request ideas. If you really want to hear us talk about Angel One and hear our wacky out takes on how we're going to discuss Angel One, we can go into it more deeper on a later episode.
I do want
to
point...
I had no plans to go into it anytime soon on my own.
Yeah, Angel One is a little forgettable episode in the very first season.
Tasha Yar's in it for crying out loud, so yeah. I mean, it's...
Yeah, right.
It's got to be forgettable.
One of the things I want to mention is so silly. It has nothing to do with anything. Is a little. It's so funny. If you watch it on Netflix, because you can watch it on Netflix, there's a scene where they're having some like champagne or wine of some sort, and they're drinking it, and Mistress Beata goes to put her glass down, like it looks like she's going to put it on a table, but there's actually a stagehand grabs it, and you can actually see the hand. It is hilarious. It's like, if you weren't looking for it, you would never see it. I just happened to see it. It's so funny.
Was he wearing like a regular Worcester watch so you could tell it was a stagehand or something?
I don't know. It was like, you know, it should have been a gorilla hand or something like that. Would have been really funny. But no, it's just like there's a hand just grabs it, and then she gives the same that hand to Riker's drink to the same hand, but you don't see it the second time because you only see it the first time. It's a little off.
A gorilla hand would be more like a Three Stooges joke.
Oh, it'd be great. It'd be hilarious. But yeah, so Riker, world leader, he's got that in his pocket now. So, I mean, does Picard even have that? Yeah, Kirk has it. He did it with, I can't remember her name. It starts with an E. Oh, man. The tears that you touch, you fall in love with them.
I don't remember that episode.
You do remember it. We talked about it, but it's beside the point.
Oh, I can't remember it based on your vague description.
Yeah. She was the leader. She was like that spoiled...
The spoiled... Yeah, okay, I don't remember.
You know who I'm talking about. She looks like
the dreadlocks.
Yeah, she looks sort of like a Cleopatra look or something to her. Yeah. I can't remember the episode's name right off the bat. But, yeah, so Kirk's got a world leader in his back pocket. Does Picard?
The girl who played, I can't remember the actress's name, but she was in, she starred along with Patrick Stewart in X-Men. She was Jean Grey. She was in an episode of Next Generation where she was to be married, I think, to a world leader. But, like, she could only fall in love with one person, and they freaked out when they opened up her box that she would get contaminated.
She bonded to Picard.
She bonded to Picard. So Picard never did the deed, but like, he basically stole this woman's love, or she gave it to him, and he's got to live with that for his whole life, that, like, this woman loves him, and she can't do anything
Love
about
him and
it.
Leave him Picard. He does that a lot, actually. For all his noble things that he throws out there, he's the women just come and go in his life, and he's just kind of like, whatever. I'm married to the ship.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So we got Picard with world leader. So I guess that's definitely something, like we said, to put on the resume.
Well, you know, the Deanna Troi is like the daughter of a. You know, the third rings of Beta. Like, I don't know what Luxana is as far as like their hierarchy, but she sounds like she's kind of high up.
She's higher up. I don't think she's a world leader.
She's like a princess, though.
She's up there. She's like
a daughter of a princess or something.
Yeah, she's
the third keys of Beta Z, holder of the sacred chalice of chalices.
Yeah,
or something.
No, but it's not a terrible episode. It's not a great episode. What I was going to say is something I read about as well about this episode that Gates McFadden, who plays Beverly Crusher, that this was one of the reasons that she actually either quit or was fired from for the next season afterwards.
She left. She thought the show was overly sexist, and I think there was.
But this was the thing that kind of like spurred it. And I think it was this episode, which I don't really even get because it's not really showing sexism. It's showing reverse for, you know, like instead of a male-dominated society, we have a female-dominated society. But it just shows that, you know, male, female, it can go either way and we can all do it wrong. You know, we can, exactly. You know, it's like just because a guy's in charge or a girl's in charge, they can still do it wrong.
Exactly.
And I didn't understand why that was necessarily sexism.
And the whole message was they were trying to go for equality. I mean, Riker was trying to, you know, and the crashed ship guy, Odin ship guys, they were trying to go for equal society.
Maybe she felt, oh, yeah, a man's going to come down on my planet and tell us the women how to do it right.
Oh, maybe. I mean, that could have been her take on it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just still, you know, wrong no matter what. So, I mean, there's not equality. So that's the issue with it. But... that was the Angel One series. We didn't go into the full thing, but that's all you need to know is that Riker made it with the Mistress Beata.
Yes, and then Troy and Tasha come in and kind of barge in a little early. Oh, well.
No, they actually make it.
Well, no, but like, you know, like they were still hanging out, and then they kind of come back and it's like...
Oh, yeah, they were going to have, yeah, they're going to have a little morning sex or something, but then, you know, the crew comes, Captain, we can't make the people from the Odin come with us.
It's a shame.
Yeah, they had fun, though.
Yes, indeed they did. So that is it for another episode of Some of the Holics, guys. Definitely, you know, give us feedback. We want to hear what you guys think of the show, what you guys think of our segments, what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of, you know, suggestions for entire episodes. We want to hear anything and all of what you've got so we can make this the best show for you guys.
We're here to serve you, make you happy.
I hope we can make you very happy. So come on and join the Facebook group if you haven't joined the Facebook group yet. I want it to be a great, fun place where we can talk anything Star Trek and just have a really good time. So thank you so much for listening. Live long and prosper. Thank you for listening. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us online at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. Our Twitter is at synthaholicduo. If you want to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan and Aaron at Blackbird2004. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes. We can also be found on Stitcher. Please tell your friends about the show. Also, if you could leave us a review and a rating, that would help us out so much. It'll help us learn how to improve so we can reach more of our fellow Trek fans. We'd love to hear your feedback. Live long and prosper. Simon came in. Country boys born and raised at the stars we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Some more testing for Star Trek. Synthaholics, the podcast.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Oh, I'm not even wearing my headset. I can't even tell what's going on.
How do you know what's happening?
Magic?
Hey.
It's probably too loud.
That's too loud for my ears. My grandpa ears.
Well, grandpa ears need things to be louder.
I'm a freezer geezer.
A freezer geezer? What is this?
It's a Simpsons reference. Another thing you probably don't know. You gotta, like, catch up on all the backlogs.
So that's, like, 20 years of Simpsons I need to
get. You know what? Yeah. You might start a podcast on the Simpsons. You probably could do that. At least go up to season 8, and then you can drop off after that.
That's when Family Guy probably took over.
They just got, the writing just got really simple. Family Guy didn't jump in probably another 5-6 more years. It's just that they just got really, like, shitty writing for a while.
That's unfortunate.